It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, this is Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law, and I have with me Michelle Lobato. How are you doing, Michelle?
Hi, pretty jolly. I've been enjoying all the Christmas lights I see around town. It's just a nice old time to be around.
You look jolly.
I am jolly.
I'm not jolly. I'm Scrooge. But I want to talk to someone who is jolly, who's always seems up. I don't understand how he can be up so much, probably because he knows more about life than most people will ever dream about knowing. And I'll tell you, I saw a chat room where two people were talking and they said, you know, Andrew Yang should be on every podcast. Everyone needs to hear him. So we're happy that he's on KBC Radio today, and we'll be on the podcast at Gervie's Law. But I want to introduce Andrew. It's great to have you, Andrew. But first, let me get a little bit of a background here for people who may have been sleeping over the last several years. The former CNN political commentator, of course, but most importantly, remembered as a former presidential candidate. A lot of formers here, but there's a lot going on now that is not former. Presidential candidate in 2020, the Democratic Party presidential primaries. He's a former mayoral candidate. And interestingly enough, when we had Karen Bass, the LA mayor, on the show, I asked her, why would you want this gig? And we may have to ask Andrew why he considered wanting that gig and what his thoughts are on Zoran's taking over from him, even though he didn't get elected. Lobbyist, business entrepreneur, we're going to talk a lot about that. Co-founder of the Forward Party, the centrist third party and third option alternative to the two major U.S. political parties. And back in 2022 on the show, we had Christine Todd Whitman on the show, former governor of New Jersey, who, by the way, was also one of the founders of the Forward Party, and we talked about it in 2022. So there's another connection. But the most important thing about Andrew that we need to talk about first is that he's a graduate of my alma mater, Brown University. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Andrew. I could keep talking, but we need to hear you.
Oh, that's so kind. I could listen to you keep talking about me all day. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
You know, it's interesting because you've been someone who has been thinking out of the box for so long. And it reminds me, and I just have to get the Brown connection here. And I know you know of Ira Magaziner's before your time, but in the late 60s, 69, I think he came up with the new curriculum at Brown University. And that was a very creative attempt to bring in things that people didn't really consider the norm at universities or colleges, such as pass-fail grading, stopping the requirement to have required courses as an emphasizing student choice, thinking of the student first. Tell us how you evolved into this free thinker, creative, out-of-the-box thinker, obviously thinking of people first, as Ira thought of students first.
Oh, wow. I remember Ira Magaziner, not directly or personally, but certainly very much as a presence on campus. You know, I don't know how much people know about our alma mater, but I joke sometimes that it was harder to be an asshole at Brown. There was something of a no asshole culture, and I'm grateful for it. I think that I certainly benefited immensely from being in such an intellectually inquisitive and creative environment. I joke that the stereotypical thing a Brown University grad does is they move to Brooklyn and start a niche magazine.
Well, we know about that. Yes. You're having some inside references. Interestingly enough, I was just quickly looking up Ira Magaziner because I wanted to know what happened to him since then. And there's a lot about him in Wikipedia. And at the end of the Wikipedia article, it said that he has been connected with being on private flights with Jeffrey Epstein. So that was something that kind of jumped out at me. We had Gloria Allred on our show last week, and she talked a lot about the Epstein thing, but it's kind of interesting. And in the world that you've been in the high finance world and entrepreneurial world, apparently there are people like Iron Magazine, and we're not obviously passing as a lawyer here. I'm not, and you're a lawyer. We're not going to pass judgment or say whether or not there's any evidence or has anything to do with it. But how does that figure into your world? You've been associated with so many people who have been in the finance arena. And does the Jeffrey Epstein name come up just like it did with Ira Magazine or in the Wikipedia article?
You know, I have a much more boring life where most of these people were nowhere near my orbit. You know, I just read about it like everyone else. And so I don't know if that just means I don't hang around with big shots enough. I'm also somewhat naive enough to be surprised when some of this stuff comes out. You know, it just seems really gross and unfortunate. You know, feel terrible for the women and girls and children first and foremost. You know, like the Lawrence Summers story, if you're not up on this, I mean, he was essentially just sent packing at Harvard
right.
because of some new Epstein-related disclosures. You know, and just like the lack of judgment and character around this really makes me sad.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough one, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that because you have more positive things. You know, I read somewhere where you said that you think that perhaps 49% of the people now identify as independents. First of all, I don't know if that's true or not and what your basis is for saying that, if you did say it, and you can clarify. But if it is true, I want to hear your take on why.
So that number was based on a poll by Gallup or one of those types. If you poll Americans right now about their party affiliation, it's roughly half independent. For Dems, it might be, 20-something percent, Republicans, something similar. And it gets even higher among young people. Young people are very negative about both of the major parties, and so that makes them de facto independent. Unfortunately, it's growing all the time because people don't think the status quo is working. Now, if you kept up with me at all, you know that some of the things I want for the future are pretty dramatic. I mean, I ran for president on giving everyone $1,000 a month, which seems like a better and better idea now that AI has gone from being, speculative to very much here with us. The reason why I've gotten into democracy reform is I don't think that either major party is capable of addressing some of the challenges that are unfortunately growing hairier and thornier. So the half of Americans are independent. It shows up in multiple polls from organizations that do that sort of thing.
Are you going to be the first independent president?
Well, shoot. I think that we're going to have a real contest sometime in the next number of years. And if I end up being someone who helps set that stage, I'd be thrilled. One of the things that I'm not sure people know about me is that it's not like I grew up imagining myself in office. I joke that I am Asian after all, so it's not like my parents were like, you're going to run for president someday. Like, that wasn't really a conversation.
Well, you describe yourself. Now, when you talk about Asian, you have a descriptive. Why don't you tell us what the descriptive Asian is?
Oh, you mean the magical Asian man from the future?
Who that's him. That's the guy, Andrew.
Yeah, that's me. I appreciated that. I take it. I heard when you talked about me in the intro that you think I'm optimistic. Which I also appreciated. I sometimes sound kind of bleak when I describe what I think is coming down the pike in terms of the labor market and AI and the impact of some of these things. But I'm optimistic functionally because I'm someone who wants good things to happen, and I'm also a husband and father, and it's not helpful to be negative and dour when, you know, there are people that are relying on you.
You know, Michelle's really into AI, and I know you have talked about how quickly AI has taken its hold on our country and the world and what the impact will be moving forward. Michelle, talk a little bit because, you know, she's a little bit younger than us. And
yes, I'm 25. And Andrew, first of all, I want to give you kudos for being one of the first people to really become public with AI, because I remember in your presidential campaign, you really made that a focal point. And I feel like we were still then in the very beginning stages of accepting AI into our society and really believing that it's coming for the job market. So kudos to you on that. And also, I wanted to give you praise on your resonance with the youth. It hits hard. I mean, I know you just hosted a no phones party, and we'll get into Noble Mobile, but you're just so attuned with culture. And I don't know how it is that you do it, because, you know, keeping up with the younger people, it's not an easy thing to do.
Oh, wow. This makes me so happy, Michelle. I feel like more and more of a fuddy-duddy, honestly, because I am a parent, and my boys don't think I'm terribly with it.
Or cool.
But I do watch a lot of movies and TV, and I try and listen to music, and I love art and culture and creativity. I'm around a lot of young people. And I do have some adroit staffers who tell me to do this or do that on TikTok or for Reels. So I'm pumped that you think that I'm still actually sort of cool because, you know, like, I'd love for you to tell my kids as much.
You know what? I have two kids, 12 and 11, and they won't believe anything. Even if someone else tells them that their dad is cool and hip and with it, they still see you in a different light. But, you know, that'll change. That'll change. Mark Twain taught us that, you know, give them a few more years. I know once your kids get into their 20s, mid-20s, then maybe they'll look back at you and say, hey, that dude really changed a lot, and he knows what he's talking about. So let's talk, though, something a little more serious about the AI decimating the job market, and it's coming quickly. How do you, and what we all are going to talk about Noble Mobile, that's one aspect, a brilliant aspect, but something that can be extrapolated. But talk about AI and how the future looks for kids like your age and my kids' age as they get into the job market.
So AI is replacing a lot of jobs and workers, and it's hitting entry-level white-collar workers the hardest right now. The stats for recent college grads have never been worse. And that makes me very, very sad, because I remember being a college grad and showing up and contributing maybe, but also just getting a lot of experience and mentorship occasionally. And having our next generation not get those things strikes me as shooting ourselves in the foot. On the flip side, though, I can see these organizations, and these organizations are just going to be trying to do more with less when it comes to people. And I did see some of this coming back in 2018, 2019. It's happened faster than I thought it was going to be honest. Like, I did not think that AI was going to be this vastly
prevalent.
Implemented.
Yeah.
This quickly. Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, when you talk about that, I know you're looking to the future because that's been your thought process. But we talked about universal basic income, the UBI. Don't you think, though, as much of a great selling point it is in politics, that it is just a very small approach to a bigger issue in terms of AI taking over the job market, or at least preventing people from having the jobs they had in the past? So how do you take a UBI kind of theory and expand it? I mean, are you suggesting that so many people will not be working, will not have the income, but the UBI isn't going to replace that, will it?
Well, one of the misconceptions about me and UBI was that I thought that a bit of money is going to do the trick. I'm the first person to recognize that folks need community, structure, purpose, fulfillment, training, value, and that money doesn't do that for someone alone. A lot of that relies upon organizations and opportunities. Now, I think having money in people's hands will invigorate a lot of those opportunities. But the actual vision, and I did write this in 2018, was that we need a human-centered economy that rewards us for arts and creativity, nurturing and caretaking, health and wellness. One of my jokes was that we should get paid to go to the gym as opposed to vice versa, how good it would be.
Do you have that, Andrew, in Hey Yang, Where's My $1,000?
That particular idea, some version of it, yeah, because I'm always trying to push the human-centered economy in various ways. I don't think I had the gym reference.
It's a good one. You might have to come out with a second book, because the first one, the new one, reviews are great. People think it's hilarious. And by the way, they can get that. They can get that on Amazon, can't they? Hey Yang, Where's My $1,000?
Yeah. It's on pre-order now. Yeah. I am coming out west to do a couple of book talks, including one in. Well, they're both in February. If you go to andrewyang.com/events, one of them is with Rainn Wilson in Beverly Hills, and the other one is at Mayonnaise in San Francisco. And so anyone who's in either of those places would love to see you in February.
But that sounds great.
It comes out on February 3rd.
Yeah, and you can find that at andrewyang.com, because I think a lot of people want to come out. They're listening to your podcast, the Andrew Yang podcast, which is great, in the newsletter. But seeing you in person and getting that book, that's a whole different experience.
Sure, and I'll sign it. And Rainn and I will hopefully have a fascinating convo in L.A.
We'll be there. We're going to get Gervie's Law to come to the L.A. show in Beverly Hills.
Oh, yes.
Fantastic. That'd be wonderful.
Anyway, I interrupted. Go ahead. You were giving your thoughts on the AI. And we got to get on, because we wish we had more time, but we do want to talk about Mobile Noble. So why don't you let's test you out here. How do you segue from what you were talking about to AI to having a purpose and a meaning in life and saving a little bucks with Mobile Noble? Noble Mobile.
Yeah,
Noble Mobile. And yeah, you said how easy it is. You say this is the easiest name. Noble Mobile.
Noble Mobile. Well, thank you. So I'm trying to get money back into people's hands. Obviously did that politically, and we're still making progress there. But I realized that I can do it right now if I can just get us a better deal on our wireless data. The average American spends $83 a month on our cell phone service. The average European spends $35 a month. So that difference of $50 a month or so, times 12, times all of us, is about $100 billion a year.
Wow.
And I personally, don't judge me, you can judge me, whatever. I spent $140 a month on Verizon just for myself.
Mine's on AT&T, so I get it.
And I now spend less than $50 on Noble Mobile, so I saved myself $1,000.
But the whole thing, Andrew, it begs the question, is the service the same? Because everyone will jump at Noble Mobile if they feel they're getting the same service as they're getting from the ones gouging them, like Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T.
Well, here's the kicker. So the takeaway is, yes, it is the same service. I can even talk about why that is. I switched from Verizon to Noble, and everything is the same or better. Noble is on the T-Mobile network because you know that each of these kind of sits on one of the three big carrier networks. So what has happened is that all three carriers have invested to a point where each of the networks is excellent and good to go and actually has excess capacity in just about every circumstance. The issue is that I made a buying decision of Verizon 26 years ago, back when Verizon was great and Sprint sucked, and that was actually a very real quality difference. But then fast forward 26 years, and you have three networks that all work great, and I was paying a premium for no reason in particular. By the way, I can actually document how much we're getting gouged by the fact that Verizon and AT&T paid out $18 billion in dividends to shareholders in the last 12 months. Like, at this point, the industry is largely a cash transfer, but all of the networks work great now. And Noble, if you try Noble and you don't like it, we'll just give your money back. There's a guarantee associated with it, and your other carrier will probably give you a sweetheart deal to come back. So there's really no downside. The real downside is in the inertia and what people perceive as switching costs. But because of the way the technology has matured, you can keep your phone, keep your number, and switch from Verizon or AT&T to Noble in about 8 minutes. So the whole thing is wild, guys. Like, it's really exciting for me to make this case because I can see that we can save billions of dollars together.
And this is just one step toward a lot of savings. I know you talk about Mark Cuban and his cost-plus drug savings, buying generic drugs in bulk and then selling them at a reasonable price. It's kind of the same thing. If more people are moving in that direction, people are going to save a lot of money and still get the same services and maybe not be as depressed and angry saying that nothing works. That's your segue for nothing works.
Yes, no. So there are a couple of big benefits. Number one, when you're saving money, you actually feel better, mentally healthier, more optimistic. But then the second thing is that Noble Mobile gives you money back at the end of every month for any data you don't use.
Wow.
So the average Noble Mobile user uses 17% less screen time in month two because we like money. And if you think about your screen time, it has a very negative effect on your mental health past a certain point.
Yeah.
It makes you feel more suspicious and, like polarized. So if we can get you off of your screen, looking at other people, having more money hit your account, and then do this with as many expenses as possible, like Mark Cuban has done, then we'd have like a much better shot at the kind of society that we all are really, in my mind, deserve, but that we'd all hope to live in.
So we only have a couple minutes, but is that basically what Mark Dunkelman talks about, how to bring it back, whatever it is?
Mark Dunkelman... Yes, in large part. He talks about how we have this bureaucracy that ties everything up in knots, and we've all become skeptical of it. And so the goal is to try and curb it from doing anything bad. But in that process, we've kind of tied our own hands where we can't do big things and we don't trust government to do big things. Mark's trying to untie the bureaucracy. I think that's the right direction. Even though there are a lot of people listening to this who also feel somewhat conflicted, you're like, hey, do I trust folks?
Right.
You would trust like your favorite people. You might trust your favorite company or organization. In order to get out of this mess, we're going to need to speed things up. And right now, the public sector is falling behind while you have innovations that are threatening to kick a lot of Americans to the curb, unfortunately.
Yeah, in the last minute, Andrew, tell us about your direction. You've talked about what Dunkelman talks about in the book, Why Nothing Works, and how you support it. You've talked about Mark Cuban. What is your Andrew Yang's direction moving forward?
Well, gosh, I want to get everyone off of their screen time. So check out MobileMobile.com and hopefully save $1,000 a year like I did. I do have a book coming out that hopefully is uplifting and enlivening. And I'm trying to create better political choices so that you have real, actual accountability from our elected leaders.
And you can... Go ahead.
Yeah. No. So I'm taking big swings. Anyone who wants to keep up with me, feel free to check out andrewyang.com. And hopefully I'll see you for the book event.
In February, we'll see you there.
Oh,
Andrew
yes.
Yang, thanks
Thank
for being on
so
Kirby's
much.
Lot today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care. And that's going to do it for another episode of Gervie's Law. We will see you next week.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposures, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner. If you're suffering from a work-related injury, Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now, 855-4-RGW-LAW, 855-4-RGW-LAW, or go to rgwlawfirm.com.